Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am thrilled today to bring you Morgan Brigg. You know, Vashon Island is an island full of creatives and full of artists who are all original and interesting in their own ways, but amongst a community of very original artists, I put Morgan near the top because her sculptures and her 3D work have such imagination attached to them. They really, it's like they come from somewhere else. And we're going to have the very hard job today of describing these assemblages, these 3D sculptures, as well as the rest of Morgan's work, without letting you see them. I'll try and put a picture on the show notes, but mostly we'll send you to Morgan Brigg's website, which has beautiful examples of her work. But now we're working in the world, not even of 2D, we're doing it orally. We're going to try and describe the wonderful world that she's created. So first, Morgan, thank you so much for coming out on this kind of gray morning.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So the first question is really, how do you describe yourself? Because you are original. You're not the same as everybody down the block. So how do you give people a sense for your art and who you are?
Very simply, I say that I am a 3D sculptural, mostly wall-hung, but also freestanding figurative artist. But also I like to say that I'm a 3D collage person because I am bringing so many different kinds of parts together, whether they're found objects or whether they're clay parts that I've made or metal parts that I've made. So the collage part of it really fits for me. And then beyond that, it's also how do I infuse those creatures with emotion or what I'm going through, my own experiences. So there's a lot going on there.
And that's what makes your art so interesting and so exciting, because it feels like you're not just creating something like people can create and mass produce, Your creatures, as you call them, it kind of embodies something. It's like you feel like there's a story there, both in terms of how you wove the materials together and why those particular materials meant something to you, but also, you know, what gave birth to this amazing creation, you know? And so let's describe them for a second. You know, I have a picture here from your website of, I don't know, Wise One, is that what you call it?
Oh, Wise One.
Oh,
yes.
Wise One. It's so delightful, kind of owl-like. How big is the Wise One?
I would say it's about 8 inches, six to eight inches tall, in that range.
Is that typical for your creations?
That's pretty typical. I like to work on the smaller side of things because it's just, I guess I can focus on it so much more. It mm-hmm. just feels natural for me.
Right.
But I do go up to a couple feet tall, and that would be kind of where I, you know, that's the biggest. And then, yeah, and then this size where it's about 6 to 8 inches is also, I have to be aware too of what people, the price range of where things go.
Truly.
So
truly.
I try to be diverse in size.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah. Well, that also, yeah, and I just want to say again, you know, go visit Morgan Brigg's website because you'll see these amazing creations that are really very difficult to describe. They're, you know, you use the word assemblage. Do you still use that word? You said collage just a moment ago, but I had Rene Marceau on the show towards the beginning of this run, and she works with natural objects, and she calls it assemblage. You work with all sorts of objects, and do you call it 3D collage or assemblage also works? Or
both, I think both of those terms are, they work. But for me, because the process is trying different things together, it really becomes more of a collage kind of thing. Well, that's assemblage too.
Yeah. No, but it's interesting. Yeah. It's because collage can tie together different materials, but also different ideas, you know, like where you want something to go. You have an art degree, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you were trained in fine arts, but then you got your start doing graphic design. Am I right there?
Yeah, I was more trained in graphic design too, package design and, well, the whole thing, logos and everything else. And I loved that at the time. That was really, it called to me.
Right.
And I felt like I had to appease my dad, who wanted me to be something successful, and I had to find something that was, right, you know, more valid than the fine artist. But
yeah,
the
world needs people who can design packaging. It's in a whole world into itself. But if I understand the story right, you reached a point where it started to be, it wasn't filling your heart anymore to be working on packaging in corporate America. Is that right?
That's very true. Yeah. I just found that it wasn't. Well, I think the thing that most clearly defines it is that when you're a graphic designer, you have to know the story behind the product or the story behind the company. You need to know their story, the company you're working for. And I just got tired of listening to everyone else's story and then making it work on a package or in a logo or whatever. And I wanted to start telling my own story. And so that was where the leap just happened, that I thought, well, you need to go for it then.
Yeah, well, I think that's the marker in the sand, because when you're as a designer, you're working for someone else. They get to say what works, and they're the client. So your own artistic sensibility, although it can infuse what you do, it's secondary in a sense. You know, ultimately, the customer decides.
Yes,
and
definitely.
How old were you when that moment of truth came up?
I was about mid-30s.
Mid-30s.
When I realized it.
So take me back to that moment. You had a dad who wanted you to make something of yourself and at least pay your own way in the world. You had this hankering to explore the art that lived within you. What gave you the courage to actually break away from the one world and move into the other?
Well, number one, I was really disappointed. And I was working for big corporations doing food packaging. And so there was I noticed within their cultures that they were very much into backstabbing and they weren't into really helping each other out much. It was not good. And so I was very disappointed with that. But then also my father, he was diagnosed with cancer. And I was at his side weeks before he passed. And one of the things that he said to me was, man, I really had a good life and I have absolutely no regrets. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, it was almost like a knife to my heart. It was like, because I knew I wanted to make the leap. And that him saying that just clearly defined to me, well, you know, I can be on my deathbed and just have the biggest regret that I didn't make this leap now, or I can go in, give it a try. And if I fail, then plan B comes into it. I don't know what plan B is yet, but what the heck? This is going to be way more interesting than staying and kind of dying on the vine.
Yeah. And how powerful that you had that insight at 36, was it? You know, or 30?
Yeah, 38, 36,
somewhere in there. In your 30s, because a lot of folks wait until their 60s and beyond to be able to, and then it's different. You know, it has some advantages, but it's also different. So you were in your late 30s and suddenly you were a full-time artist. What happened next? You didn't have had you been doing art on the side? Did you have a clientele? Did you have any market that was lined up for you or anything? Or know what you wanted to do? Or
I didn't have answers to a lot of those questions. I had the faith that I was a graphic designer. I knew marketing and and what lives out there and what I needed to do in order to start selling my work, or had a vague idea of what to do. And so I just kind of dove into it. I didn't even know. God, looking back, it was like, oh my gosh. But I didn't really know what medium I wanted to totally be in. I had started doing mask work and was very intrigued with all the things that would bubble up emotionally with mask work. And then I started exploring copper and forming copper and then enameling on copper. And so I had just begun those processes, and I wanted to make them work in whatever I was selling. And so I started making masks with all of those elements. And then from there, it started transforming into other things.
Cool. Well, I love that. I love that a love of materials was also leading you forward, that wanting to work and then just following that and seeing where it led you and how you could do that.
Yeah, I was pretty courageous when I look back. I don't know. Yeah, it's.
I know, it's because I didn't have the answers. Sometimes in life you go, if I had known, there was going to be a little more challenging,
yeah,
you know, would
yeah.
I have gone there? But we don't, fortunately, sometimes.
So. Yeah.
How did you find your first market, your original customers?
Well, I knew that I wanted to be in galleries, and so and upper end galleries, but I knew that I had to start at a lower level and
right.
more craft galleries.
Okay.
To begin with, and so I just hunted a few of those out within this area, this region, and then I had images, slides back in those days, of all of my work, and I just started sending out that image. Those images to different galleries where I wanted to be. And then, so those started opening up very gradually. And then from there, I would do road trips and I would go to galleries I thought might carry my work. And I just kind of act like I was a buyer and see how they treated people, because how they treated people was very important to me.
Right.
And so I just kind of researched it that way and then sent backed up, you know, slides.
You were gutsy. You know, that was gutsy. I don't know whether it's changed at all, but I doubt it, and I don't know whether you were living in the Northwest still.
I was living in Seattle.
I've just finishing a book called See the Picture by this woman who's a journalist who wanted to understand art and the art world by diving into it. Like, what is it that they see that I don't see? So the first few chapters, she's working as an assistant in a gallery, you know, like a modified slave, I'd call it.
No.
And I felt like I was so creeped out by some of her experiences, where it was New York City. It was a different level. But the galleries were mean and they were secretive and it was almost like a cult, and they were degrading and unhelpful to emerging artists. And it just made, it gave me the creeps. But it sounds like that wasn't your experience.
Well, I knew kind of just by instinct that the New York market would be way more cutthroat and backstabbing. And I didn't want anything to do with it. Plus, I was aware that shipping from here out to there
right.
of my work would be very costly. And I didn't really need to take that on right away. So, I just needed to work with people that I could respect and that I liked. I had a good vibe about, because I was pretty good about telling, you know, just from a gut reaction to someone when you meet them, I could tell whether it was going to possibly work or not. And so I was pretty careful that way. I guess I didn't think it was that courageous. I just was doing what I needed to do.
Well, it was great that you had, you know, the one gift of working in a corporate setting and having the kind of background you had was that you didn't know marketing, and you did know that you couldn't just be in your own cubicle. You had to take things out into the world. Do you think the gallery scene has changed? And this was like 20, 30 years ago that you've had.
Yeah, it was the only option. There was no social media.
Uh-huh.
So you really couldn't take it into your own hands that easily. and I just needed to get my work out there in front of people to start.
Was it easier to get into galleries then? Were there more galleries?
There were more galleries. I don't know. If you're going after a certain gallery, they're going to be hard to get into. But that's why I was starting like more at the craft level, because I could get into that pretty quick.
Nice.
And then I could start selling and, just begin that whole process of making selling.
Right. And your customer, I know one of the things is also, I think a fact for folks who are making 2D art paintings is that a lot of people still view art as decoration. You have these apps that you can use to show people how your art will look next to a sofa and, in a light shade of gray. And you go, well, that's good. That's good. And I think it's helpful to the artists. On the other hand, I don't get that your art is necessarily decoration. It just has too much sort of personality in it. And maybe it's decoration. Maybe it fits with, somebody's decor. But when they're looking at your art or when you've seen it homed to others, what do you think people are looking for?
I think a huge part of me creating the art is that I want to have a connection with other people. And I realized pretty early on when I was starting to do this work that people were not stupid to the fact that there was a lot of emotion that had been packed into it, or there was a message even.
Right.
And they would zero in on what it was and go, oh my gosh, I've been there. And this is about this and this and this, isn't
it? Amazing.
And it would blow me away. Because at first I thought, oh, people don't know. They're just, guessing. But it's like, no, they know. People are very intuitive for the most part. And so I think that most people, and especially I have titles of my pieces that kind of hopefully is a little door that opens up to let them have that first step into it and access to what I was trying to communicate. So I feel that it's more an emotional, it's being attracted to the image first off and the materials and just in general, that it's more playful, I think. And then when they start looking at it, they're kind of like, oh, there's something else going on here.
Wow.
And I think it connects to me.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I'm so glad they can see that, because also they're, I use the word rehome, because sometimes you feel like, you're going in, your character, your creation is going to be living with somebody else, and you really want them to have a living relationship with it. So it's not just another thing that ends up in the corner, but something that gives them joy or something that makes them pause or feel something. And so it sounds like your buyers often get that. They get,
I hear about it, so I believe them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, your work, I think I read that some of your work comes out of your dream world. Is that true? Or how does a piece get sparked in you? How do you get the original impulse for something you're going to create?
Well, anymore now, I just go into the studio with sort of an open mind and as fear-free as I can be of worrying about anything. I just go in there and I usually have a lot of my parts and pieces laying out everywhere, so I have an idea of what I have. And then I also, when I do the clay, I pretty much I just start clumping foil and start to get a basic shape going. And then from there, I trust that it's going to turn into something that I will want to follow through on. And and so I'm kind of more in that realm now. Every now and again, I'll go in and I'll think, okay, well, I want to make a series of frogs or something, and that's a little different, but that's not the norm.
Did your dreams ever used to inform your...
Yes, off and on. For a while, I was going to a dream group where there was a number of women, and we would all discuss our dreams and even play role about characters in dreams. It was just fascinating to me. And then a lot of times during that time of maybe about 5 years, the dreams informed where I would start
with
my work. But now, Not so much.
Interesting. Well, it's fascinating to hear you because, you know, I do some abstract painting and I often just start, you know, like it's a yellow day and going from there, or I feel like, and then letting the piece inform me as it, and sometimes it goes in a good direction. Sometimes you have to start again, but feeling led rather than having a preconceived, I'm going to do a, and your work is figurative, but it sounds like it starts with the same kind of impulse of let me just start creating, get my fingers, start moving the aluminum foil, and then see where it wants to take me. Is that?
That's very true. Yeah. I mean, there's times too when I'll just think, oh, I'm just going to make a bunch of heads.
It's a head day.
It's a head day. And I just always feel like I can't make too many because I always need practice in that department. And but what's great is that each one of them come out with a different personality, and I can't control it really.
Right.
And so then from there, that might inform the head, and the expression will inform the figure.
Yeah.
But that's, that's not, like I said, that's not the norm. Usually I just dive in.
During the pandemic, you made a lot of teethy creatures, didn't you? And did that just happen, or was that, you know, were you into teeth, or was that deliberate, or how did that work?
Yeah, I think the teeth tend to come out when I'm pissed off about the political scene.
It's a good vector, yeah.
So that's what, I mean, other things can make teeth appear too, but my experience is if I'm listening to the news a lot or whatever, and it's just like, I got to release this, this set of emotions, because I don't want to carry it around. So it's got to come out in something. And that's the best way for me to release.
Brilliant.
It.
It's a lot better than posting on social media, you know, doing something that will have no constructive benefit. But it was interesting that, you know, the pandemic birthed a lot of your teeth creatures. And are they teethy now? Or are you beyond your teeth state?
Oh, they're not done. No, they're not done. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just too much wildness going on. And as a matter of fact, sometimes I feel overwhelmed by it. And so it's like, whoa. Yeah, I have to like calm down and get kind of a grounding by not doing that, and then release it and go, okay, it's a free for all. Do your worst. Make something really teethy.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's an interesting thing, because it sounds like you have to do two things. You have to be in a place where you're calm and balanced and centered. And at the same time, you want your pieces to reflect the emotion and also be a release of some of that emotion. So it's almost two different forces. The one, you know, calm and create and have your intuition and be centered, and the other, wow, let her rip.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes, for me, the piece more interesting, is when you've got those two forces kind of playing against each other. Yeah.
Right. It makes me think that everybody should have some kind of way to constructively harness the difficult feelings, you know, for reacting to a world that we can hardly control, that seems to be going off the deep end sometimes.
Yeah. And also, one of the things that has helped me purge on some of these creatures is just, like, I'll purposely have a white clay underneath, and then I'll paint the whole thing black, and then I'll go in there with a writing tool and just scratch and just rant. I mean, that writing just rants all over the piece, and it's just really releasing and satisfying.
Wow.
And people, and I always think, oh, no one's going to buy that. But wow, they can be some of the first ones out the door. And I don't write so that everything is legible, because it's so angry and pissed off.
Yeah.
That it's just, but the emotion gets translated.
Wow.
Really. Quite well, I think, well enough that people respond.
Interesting. Do you ever hit a blank spot or a dull spot, or times when it's hard to create, and what if you do, what do you use to re-inspire yourself?
Absolutely is the answer to that question. I use a whole bunch of different things, but kind of the number one thing is I need to go into the studio and just have kind of a FU day.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And just all of the things that I normally worry about, is it going to be sellable, or are people going to respond, or just throw all those things off to the side and say to myself, okay, if you can be doing anything at all, make anything you want, go ahead and go for it. Just do it right. I mean, do it now. I don't care if it's sewing. I don't care if, you know, you're making a pair of pants. I don't care what you're doing, but do something that is calling your name and is you're curious about. And I find that that kind of play is the door that reopens access to something bigger. So but I have to be able to access the play part of it. And it can be really challenging. Really challenging.
Well, yes, especially when you're coming in from a world that doesn't seem very playful, you know, either, you know, because of what's happening in the global environment or because, you know, of life and all. And to be able to find the one thing that is calling your name on a particular afternoon that invites you to take the first step.
Yeah. I mean, one of the other things I do is I like to take my month of January and just take the whole month typically and say, okay, anything goes. You need to explore and you need to be playful or just try things out. We have no expectation of how it's going to turn out, which that part's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
That helps too.
What a gift. I mean, to actually have that in your yearly calendar, the month of renewal, where you can step away from the having to produce for a certain outcome to really find out what's there and play and see where that takes you and refresh your work in a certain sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's also terrifying. Oh, I'm going to take that whole month and not do my work. I mean, you know, there's always those forces going on that say, oh, yeah, that's a nice idea, but really, are you going to do it today? And it's like, yeah, I know that it's going to eventually lead me in the right direction.
Right.
I have no idea what that is right now, but I got to trust that it's going to be okay. It's always been okay before, so I'm going to trust it's going to be okay now.
Sweet. Are there artists who have inspired your work or who you can also turn to for, okay, I'll go look at so-and-so because that always gives me a little hit, you know?
Oh, there's actually the people that kind of inspire me are doing things completely different. Well, there's a number of painters. Stephen Mackey is a guy that I've found on Instagram, and it's not my work at all. It's kind of solemn, but it's tongue in cheek, but it's not painterly. It's really controlled, and the glazing makes it look ancient, and it's figurative. It's spiritual. He inspires me, and tons of artists inspire me, and I do go look at Pinterest or Instagram or whatever on a regular basis.
Right.
But I've come to learn that that's not what's going to help me.
Uh-huh.
Because what's going to help me is for me to realize I need to make my artwork more me. I need to make it more Morgan Brigg. And what does that look like versus what other people are doing? And
right. Well, you're also at a stage in your career, are you 60 plus now?
Yes.
Where you've been exposed to a lot of art, you know, and you have an art degree and you've had years of looking, so it seems really accurate that now the looking is who's Morgan Brigg and what wants to come out of her now, not so much, you know, what's happening out there.
Yeah, well, it's a blend, I think, because you can't help but react to what's
of course
out there. But yeah, I know that it's just a part of, and It's a part of the process is to keep trying to discover what's inside, on,
right?
Even on some smaller level, if you, because it never really appears in some big way. Oh, you're this. I wish, but yeah. it doesn't. It's always a small little thing. Oh, it cracks me up because a lot of times I'll try something and it's different, but it's different in kind of a small way. And then I'll take it to like my best friend and say, look at, I've had a major breakthrough. Can you believe this? And they're like, well, what changed? You know, maybe I can see where you're using different color palette, but other than that, it looks the same. And I'm just blown away that someone won't see what I've, you know, the new ground that I've broke. But
right.
It's only for me, I guess. And that it's a stepping stone to something bigger.
Yeah.
And a learning.
And I think that is that seems the way the changes and breakthroughs happen. It's often not in the big declarative, I used to be a, now I'm a. It's like, this color of yellow is amazing.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
I've never used it before, you know?
Yeah.
And to have that open up a door.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you see it, and that's what's important. Although I'm sure it's nice when your friends can reinforce the breakthrough and all.
Yeah, yeah. I go, wow, that is different. Yeah.
I would assume that most of your work you do alone. What's the importance of community for you, either on Vashon or in the wider art world?
I think, I do my work alone, and I need that solitude in order to hear what's going on and to see it more clearly, I think, within my work. But as I get older, I notice that community is extremely important just to keep me grounded again and just to get out and have some fun and to realize I'm not alone in the community of artists.
Yeah.
Like I'm with Swiftwater Gallery now here on the island, and I just love that community. There's so much talent there, and not just artistically. It's like there's, you know, people have been surgeons and people have been this and that and all sorts of different careers, and they bring it to this gallery, and it's quite inspiring and amazing.
Plus the fact that it's a cooperative, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It does change the vibe.
It's a lot.
A very positive vibe when it's not about, you know, the kind of elitism and stuff you might see other places. It's more here. This is Vashon, folks, and it's really great. And we have so many incredible artists here and all. Have you ever had to go through sort of a dark night of your artistic soul where you wondered why you're doing what you're doing?
Yes. I think it was 2008 or so when there was the recession going on.
Right.
And I was having a heck of a time. And then that was coinciding also with, I had done kind of a different look, a series of stages made out of metal. Everything was just metal. It was before I jumped into clay in any sense. And I had done all these pieces, and that was elaborate how they hung on the wall, and it was a ton of work. And I'd put out a huge show just doing that kind of work, and hardly anything sold.
Ouch.
And then it was also the recession on top of that, and I thought, oh my God, am I even going to be able to make ends meet?
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember the conversation with myself. First bawling my eyes out when the show didn't do well, but I had to purge that negativity.
Right.
And then saying, okay, well, you know, what would you do otherwise? And this small but strong ass voice came up and bubbled up and said, you belong here. You're exactly where you need to be. Trust it. It's going to be okay. But you have to keep making things, and maybe not in the same way that you did just recently, because that didn't work out and you purged yourself of it anyway, so you don't want to make another stage. So I just kept at it, and little by little it came back.
So powerful. I mean, that's the voice. The show is called Embracing the Muse. So in my parlance, that's kind of the muse. It's the little voice from within that guides our creation and sometimes pulls us back from the deep end when, you know, I think it's hard when you're a professional and you need to sell. I mean, it's part of making a living. And yet you can't make you about whether or not it sells. That is, I think that's a real hard tightrope to walk.
Yes, it is for me. And it continues to be. And I don't think that will ever go away.
Yes.
Matter of fact, I was trying to imagine, well, you know, once I truly retire, well, I don't think I will truly retire because I have to keep making.
Yeah.
But once the burden of selling is removed, will I care in the same way or will I be pushed in the same way? I don't know. Mm. I don't know.
That's interesting because it's also, I love the complexity of our multifaceted, you know, the way two different forces can kind of interact. Sometimes having to sell sounds like such a burden, but having to sell is a bit like having to publish on time.
Yes.
You know, it actually gets you up in the morning and keeps you going and keeps you on a kind of rhythm that can be really helpful.
Yeah, it's a deadline.
A deadline, you know, or knowing that the gallery wants to have the show and it's going to happen in May, which means that you've got to let them know what you're doing by X, you know, and get the materials. And yeah, maybe you're feeling sluggish, but you'll pull through, you know, because you will do that. And
yeah, it's amazing. Like if I know that I'm having an open studio sale and I don't have a whole lot of work and it's a month away, it's amazing that I can crank out. I mean, I just go, whoa.
Yeah.
And some of it will be, it's okay. But a lot of it could be quite strong pieces because I'm just not caring anymore. I'm just doing to do.
Yeah.
And so everything in me is available to just get put onto all the little figures.
Sweet.
Yeah. So it's double-edged.
You mentioned retirement, which is a word that I have very mixed feelings about. You know, when I wrote this book, Meeting the Muse After Midlife, and the word didn't even make sense to me because who wants to retire, move away from, you know, or stop doing what you love? You know, no, we don't want to do that. But there is something about getting older and freeing up some of the energy that would have had to go into other things. How has your age changed your relationship to your creative process, if it has?
Well, I'm aware that I no longer have a huge desire to braise big copper structures.
Because it's so physical?
Because it's physical, and I just don't feel the calling really anymore. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just moving something like the oxyacetylene tanks of gas or heavy little mothers. And I just don't want to, you know, I have smaller tanks now of different kinds of gas that I use. And that works just fine. And I find too that I teach not a whole lot, but some. And when I do, it's mostly older women that are taking these, and older men too, that take the classes, and they can't handle some of the big torch stuff. So I have to figure that out for them so that they'll have just a small torch in their hand and they're working with that, because it's enough to get over the fear of the flame and all the rest. But you need to have something that is manageable for that age.
Mm-hmm.
And how else has it changed?
Do you feel more confident in who Morgan Brigg is as an artist?
Yeah, I don't. I have slowly pulled away from traditional galleries because I just don't want to be told what to do anymore.
Right.
And I find that if I put my mind to it, I can sell directly through social media enough that I'm okay. So
interesting. Your website is really inviting too. Your works and stuff. It's really inviting.
I think it has changed. I'm aware that I don't want to give up the torch. And I think, gosh, you better keep your wits about you then. And, you know, eat healthy, exercise, and do, I mean, I'm, when I think about staying healthy, it is directly related to what I do, and that I want to be able to handle the torch without burning down the place.
I'm taking a note because I think that would be a great episode title. I'm not giving up the torch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last question, and this may be too big, but when people come to you, if younger artists come to you or others come to you and say, how can I, you know, I want to go professional or I want to really make art the center of my life, is there any couple ideas that you give to them or any, you know?
I think one of the things that seems like they might already know, but is just to make yourself more available. It's not really the right word. Just make yourself vulnerable on like Instagram or social media so people can feel like they know you a little bit better. And then they're going to get a little bit more interested in your artwork as you start posting it,
right,
because they have access to who you are. I think that's a huge part of selling and making that connection, is just letting yourself be seen.
Yeah.
I think that was very challenging for me in younger years. It was terrifying, actually. But now it's like, well, what you see is what you get. It's just, I don't have the same fear about that whatsoever.
I think that's what makes the studio tour so special, because you feel like you can be in relationship with the artist.
Yeah.
And when that artist is real and has a story to tell, you feel like you're not just buying a piece of art or wishing you could buy a piece of art, but you're feeling the artist in that. And that's really different than a commoditized piece of art. You know, there's sites now online where you can, you know, print up your work and sell it in every different configuration you
yes.
would want.
Yes.
And it may allow certain artists to survive, but it also gets it increasingly detached, removed.
Yes.
The energetic must be a little bit different in that.
Yeah, those have never appealed to me as a venue.
Yeah.
In any way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I think people have, part of the answer to the question that I was just asking you comes in seeing how you've lived your life. Because, you know, there are adages, there's wise guidance you can give, and that's useful. But then there's also like, look, this is me for the past 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And how I've learned to come out to the public where I might have wanted to stay behind, where I've been willing to be vulnerable, where I've been willing to share myself, be real, you know, and pour more and more of the authentic me into my creations in a way that people could feel. I mean, I think seeing that says a lot, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, well, that's kind of what art's all about, is just being able to see the energy, mm-hmm. to know the energy that an artist put into it. I mean, you can't, someone who really speaks to you, you're not going to be able to stand in front of that big painting and not feel something coming off of it. And I think that's so exciting, to have that connection to other people. That's everything.
Yeah, definitely. So we're recording in January, and this is your month for playing and exploring new worlds. What might we be seeing from Morgan Brigg in the first half of 2025?
Oh, boy. Well, I have been so all over the place with playing. I have done sketchbook weirdness. I've gone into painting for a little bit, and then I popped out. I did some open wire figurative sculptures that aren't the same as what I've done in the past. And I'm still open to trying some other house type things that have backdrops. It's all a mishmash in my head. Not to narrow it down right now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was just wondering, because of the work that you did with teeth during the pandemic, I was wondering whether you're going to come out with a series of fangs.
Oh, well, I like that idea.
Okay, with the inauguration, I'm starting my Fang series. You
know? Well, that is actually very interesting to me. I like that. Yeah, bigger teeth.
Yeah, great. Well, I can't wait to see. And again, I want to share that, you know, people can come to the show notes of Voice of Vashon for this episode, but also go to your, it's morganbrigg.com.
Is that correct? Yes.
Your website. And are you doing any classes in the near future that people might be interested in?
I do classes through Bellissima Art Escapes, and there is a class that I believe is not filled up yet, and it is for August 7th through 10th, and you will be learning, it's creatures in motion. So it's like frogs jumping, rabbits jumping, and birds with their wings out, but kind of more in a skeletal way. I know that sounds weird, but there's pictures there online.
Can they find their way to it on your website? Is it the mention of the teaching is mentioned there?
Yes.
Sweet. Well, what fun.
Yeah.
What fun. Where else could you study frogs in motion?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for cutting out of your special January time to talk to me. But I am such an admirer of your art, so it's really been a joy to talk to you.
Oh, the feeling is likewise. Loved the conversation with you, Sally.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.